instant books that seize the moment and deliver long-form, in-depth coverage of a late-breaking news story are hardly new. As long ago as the early days of the space age and the JFK assassination, at least, book publishers pushed their printing presses into warp speed to capitalize on the public's hunger to learn what lay behind the headlines. In 2013, the instant book remains in demand, but that demand must be satisfied more quickly than ever. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. What once took weeks and months now may take only days or even hours. While as readers we've clearly gained in the quantity of information, the effect on information quality is less obvious. Jeremy Greenfield, editorial director for Digital Book World, is asking if we're getting writing that's nutritious or the literary equivalent of fast food. Jeremy Greenfield, welcome to Beyond the Book.
Thanks, Chris. Good to be here.
Well, it's nice to have you join us again. And Jeremy, you took a look at this for a blog post in Forbes and looking at this whole quick-to-market e-books that are very much now the norm and not the exception. Perhaps we should fill people in. What kind of projects are we talking about?
There are a couple different kinds. I would say two main kinds. One is that there's a news event that is happening right now. It's happening very, very quickly, and it just broke. And you'll see ebooks pop up within a couple of weeks, or even sometimes days of that news event. So a good example is Jeremy Lin. Jeremy Lin was something that nobody predicted, nobody knew about, and all of a sudden he was on the national scene. And in the past, you probably would have seen on the inside book proposals start to come down through agents and to publishers within just a couple of weeks. But now what you're seeing is actual books are coming out within just a couple of weeks, because what's happening is an entrepreneurial digital publisher or an entrepreneurial self-publishing author or just an aggressive author or even sort of a media entity that's covered the situation very closely will say, hey, we can write this really quickly. We can make this an ebook really quickly. And then it'll be up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Apple, before you know it. So that's one kind. Another kind is there's a news event that's happening that we've known about for a long time. It's kind of slowly building. A good example there is some of the Supreme Court decisions that came down in the past few weeks. There was a book published by the New York Times that came out the day that the Defense of Marriage Act decision came down, and it was all about the struggle for marriage equality. And the book was fully formed and ready, and this is something that they had a long lead time on. They knew that this was an issue that was important. The paper had covered it at length for years, and they knew that a decision was coming on it very, very soon, so they could have had months and months and months to prepare for this. So it's a little bit closer to something that was possible many, many years ago to get that book to market at the exact right time.
Have you any idea, Jeremy Greenfield, how well these books do in the marketplace? Obviously, there's an appetite for information, and it needs to be satisfied. It can be satisfied really very quickly these days, of course, with the plenitude of online news sites. Do these kinds of book projects really make an impact in the marketplace as they once did?
It's hard to say. I don't have any specific numbers, but from what I hear from the publishers of these books is that it varies, and some of them do quite well. It really has to do with your ability to capitalize on the moment, and unfortunately, for better or for worse, that might mean making sure your book is optimized for search engines and optimized for being recognized on Amazon and being discovered on Amazon. So it varies widely. But from what I hear, they are doing pretty well. And you also have to consider that for this kind of book, the initial investment may not be that high. Now, for Simon & Schuster to publish Walter Isaacson's biography of Steve Jobs, I don't know the financials of that, but I'm sure that the initial investment was fairly high, and the book came out, very soon after Steve Jobs' death. At the same time, the Jeremy Lin book that came out really very right after he started to hit national prominence, my guess is that the initial investment in that book was not very high. And so whatever money is made off of it is mostly profit.
Well, indeed. And you know, it's interesting because the digital aspect of this, of course, is what makes it different. It's not simply that it makes it a faster publishing path, but the project itself is very much a virtual one. I'm thinking back to, again, those days of the 60s and 70s when these kinds of instant books would have been keepsakes. They would have been part of somebody's personal library on the coffee table, that kind of thing. And in this effervescent digital world, a digital book like this at a reasonable price, which could be anywhere from 99 cents to sort of, you know, $5 or $6, that's quite reasonable to have in the Kindle or in the iPad for as long as it takes to read it, consume it, and then move on.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think that opens up actually a larger question about ebooks and digital books and consumption, which is that I don't think for most people ebooks are artifacts. And this is something we've talked about a lot. With a physical book, even if it's just a paperback, you might store it on your bookshelf, and that might be something you proudly display in your home or your apartment. But an ebook doesn't really have a proud place to display. I don't think anybody has flat screens where their bookshelves used to be displaying their digital libraries. Although I'm sure some people do look at ebooks as artifacts, I would gather that most people don't. And now that said, these sort of quick to publish books, you know, they vary. Some of them are thrown together in 5 days, you know, like some of the Jeremy Lin books, and some of them are, you know, researched and reported for months and months and months and are, you know, much more high quality. So probably some are a little bit more disposable than others. And going back to your earlier question about media fulfilling this need, you know, through free media sites or a subscription to the New York Times or something like that, I think that it does. And right now we're in a transitional period in media where it's not very, very clear where everyone is getting all of their information from and what makes the most sense. And I think it varies from person to person. I think it'll continue to evolve.
Right, indeed. And, you know, we're talking with Jeremy Greenfield about the quick-to-market ebook and how it is having an impact for the reader as well as for publishers. And you know, Jeremy Greenfield, I wonder about just where we are with something called the book. Is an instant book actually a book in the digital realm? It's an important question, I think, because it really matters to readers. If they don't think of it as a book, they will value it differently. As you say, they won't think of it as a keepsake. They will expect its price to be different, and their expectations around the kind of writing and reporting and photography and the rest will likewise be different, I would think.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that some people would even say ebooks aren't books. It's very easy to say, well, I'm holding a copy of this new book in my hand, and it's binding and pages and a cover, and so this is a book. And I'm reading the same thing on my Kindle, so that's a book. But in another way, you know, they're actually quite different. They're both containers for information, but that's almost where that's kind of where the similarities end. So some people would argue that ebooks really, really aren't books in a way. But I think, you know, for our purposes, you and I are talking about a thing that delivers information sort of in a long form, a little bit more thoughtful and deeply discussed than say an article. And in that way, I think people will compare ebooks to books, and they will wonder about the quality of things. And then again, the prices are vastly different. You know, a very high quality hardcover book, the day it comes out, can be $35 or $40. A new ebook can be as cheap as 99 cents or up to, you know, for some books, you know, $10 or $15. So the price difference is very high. And I think that signals to customers that what they're getting is not the same. And that's not even mentioning the idea that once you buy a book, you know, you're pretty much free to do with it what you want. You can lend it to somebody, you can give it to somebody, you can, you know, you can do any number of things with it. You can write in the margins. But when you buy an ebook, you can't. It's very hard to lend it to somebody. You can't really give it to somebody. You can't sell it like a used book. So I think that we're getting into some deeper philosophical questions, but the idea of these quick-to-market ebooks really does make you think of all these things.
Well, indeed. And, you know, Jeremy, you concluded your piece in Forbes with, I thought, a really thought-provoking point, which is whether or not these quick-to-market, fast-turnaround books in great quantity are going to be pushing out of the marketplace those thoughtful books that you and I, as journalists, would agree are really needed for the culture as well as for the readers. And what do you think? I'm going to place a bet on people wanting to still have that really well-written book. And a book, for me, if there's going to be a definition for it in the future, it's going to be something that took longer than an afternoon to write.
Sure. I mean, I agree with you that people will say that they want those longer form books. But if you're an economist, you know, what people say they want is less important than what people actually do with their time and with their money.
Oh, darn.
And, you know, so I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if these books are going to push out some of the longer books. But here's a scenario, I think, of something that could happen, that, you know, these shorter form books satisfy a demand for information on things that's more organized and deeply thought out than just an article or a series of articles. And for some topics, like, say, Jeremy Lin, that will mean in the future that there won't be as much room for, you know, a big book on Jeremy Lin. Now, does Jeremy Lin deserve a long, long thought out, you know, Robert Caro-style book? Probably not. But I think for the bigger topics, the ones that, you know, are of interest to reporters at the New York Times or the New Yorker or the Atlantic or something like that, I think you're still going to see books, an interest in writing and reading those kinds of books. Now, here's the really big question for publishing companies. Will there still be money in it? Will they be able to make the investments in time and energy necessary to put together these works? And, you know, if you know the history of nonfiction literature, for many of these books, there isn't money in it. It's a very hard business. It's very difficult. So, you know, I'm not afraid to look forward to a future where there aren't going to be as many of those kinds of books. But if I were a scaremonger, I might be.
Well, Jeremy Greenfield, you are not a scaremonger. You're actually a very thought-provoking journalist and essayist, and we always appreciate having you join us on Beyond the Book for a discussion about what's happening in the digital book publishing space. Jeremy Greenfield, Editorial Director for Digital Book World, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Chris. Always a pleasure.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow us on Twitter, find Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at the Copyright Clearance Center website, copyright.com. Just click on Beyond the Book. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.